Hey, everybody, it's Kai. Thanks for listening to the Corner Office Podcast. I really appreciate all those ratings and comments you've been posting on iTunes. Keep it up. It totally hooks us up. This is our first episode of 2017, but it's a rerun of sorts. A good interview. I think you'll find it interesting. And we're going to have a bunch of new things for you in the coming weeks. So here you go.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
When you talk electronic music synthesizers, there is really only one name you need to know, Bob Moog. Actually, it's spelled M-O-O-G, pronounced Moog. Back in the 1960s, he started making electronic musical instruments, and now more than a decade after Moog died, Moog Music is still growing strong. The company even has its own festival, the vaguely South by Southwest-like Moog Fest, which was going on in Durham, North Carolina, earlier this year when I was talking to Mike Adams, the president and CEO of Moog Music. First thing I asked him was about Bob Moog, the guy who started it all.
Well, Bob was obviously a genius. He was a engineer's engineer, typical kind of nerd. always had the pocket protector, 10 pens, three of them were leaking, you know, that kind of thing. But just a sweetheart of a man, very loving person, humble, loved to work hard, invent things.
Would you call him a visionary?
Definitely. Yeah, he saw things through people. He always used to say to me that he felt like he was somewhat of an antenna for ideas and that ideas flowed through him. And I think that that's very true. He liked to talk to people, especially musicians, about he called himself a tool maker for musicians, and I think that's a really good description of him.
Yeah, it's a good line.
There maybe, was a, maybe a little bit more than that.
There was a piece in the New York Times, actually, a year or so ago, that called the synthesizer the most popular physical instrument since the electric guitar. You buy that?
Oh, definitely. You know, it's very, very difficult, Kai, to bring in a new musical instrument. People try thousands of them every year. And really, since the electric guitar, there's only been, you know, well, you could argue today that, you know, the iPad or the iPhone is the next musical instrument that's actually stuck. But I would say other than that, the synthesizer is definitely it. And, he did an amazing job to make that happen because it's not easy.
For all the vision that he had, though, about engineering and music together, he was not a great businessman.
That's a widely held perception. He would probably say he was not a great businessman, but he made a lot of decisions that, let me give you one in particular.
Sure.
In the 60s, 62 or 64 maybe, he hired a publicist in New York that he paid $25,000 a year.
Ooh.
And
in the
he wanted, you know, this express goal. Yeah, that's a lot of money back then. And the goal was to make Moog synthesizers or Moog synonymous with synthesizers, and to this day,
yeah, well,
you pick up a New York Times crossword puzzle.
Yep.
You know, four-letter word for synthesizer. You know what it is. So, he did things like that.
Yeah. How often, by the way, and I confess to being an offender here. How often do you have to correct people who think it's Moog?
We go either way. If you're in Europe, it's Moog. There's nothing you can do about it. In the States, most people have picked up on the Moog thing, and we've just given up, and especially in the UK, they will not even consider it. It's Moog there. Yeah.
What kind of shape was this company in when you got there, Mike?
Bad. I would say Ileana, his wife, said that she told me specifically they were 2 weeks from closing the doors. There was a local University of North Carolina there in Asheville, and their business class had done I learned about this about 6 months later, but they had done a analysis of Moog Music and said that there was no way they would last more than 6 months.
Wow.
But, I just showed up at the right time, very fortunate to make that acquaintance through a mutual friend. And, you can ask me more questions, but it's really gone incredibly well since then.
Well, what did you do then? I mean, how did you, this was what, 2002, so it's, 12, 15 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. You took this company and you turned it around and you brought it into the digital age.
Well, we're still very much focused on the analog sound. We did marry it. We have a lot of products that are hybrid. We have a lot of products that are pure digital. But we didn't. The things that we did there back in the day were just fundamental blocking and tackling. built good, you know, he had a great design. He just was underfunded. So I brought financing to the business, you know, which is a long story in and of itself. And we were able to get some financing. And then I started on May 8th in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
He had the Minimoog Voyager designed, but not quite every little piece, but almost every piece. And but what we didn't have, we had a $750,000 purchase order, which is how we got the financing. But then we needed to buy material. We needed to buy fixtures. We needed to buy first articles. So we went to a bank and said, here's a $750,000 purchase order. Can you help us? And they gave us enough money to get started. And August 31st, or actually the weekend before that, my brother and I came in over the weekend, and we built the first five Minimoog Voyagers in this assembly line that we had that I designed. And that Monday they came in, and the production team saw what we wanted them to do, and I think we built like 15,000 of them that way since.
It's funny how specifically you remember the details. Clearly a turning point.
Oh, my goodness. That, you know, meeting Bob and becoming part of Moog Music, I can't. You know, just definitely a change in my life that I'll never forget it.
If you had to describe this company and its products to somebody who was unfamiliar, how would you do it?
Well, I mean, very simply, we make electronic musical instruments, primarily a synthesizer. And a synthesizer is a device that you can program, if you will. I don't like that term, but you can twist some knobs around and make it sound just like any instrument that you want. In fact, when he first invented it in the early 60s with a professor at Hofstra, Herb Deutsch, there were a lot of musicians that were up in arms about it. They didn't want to see it because they thought it would replace all of them because it can make any sound. But very quickly they realized that it was just another. What it can do is it can make any sound that you can think of. So that means it can make a trumpet sound or a flute sound or a drum sound or a guitar sound or a piano sound. But it can also make sounds that you've never heard in a traditional instrument. So that's the beauty of it. It's a creative tool that all artists can unleash what's in their mind and make it happen on a synthesizer.
When you hear electronic music, can you tell whether it's Moog or not?
Most of the time, if it's our stuff, I can definitely hear it. I'm not a musician per se, but you know, I've been around it so long now that you know I definitely can hear if it's an analog synthesizer for sure. I can tell you that it may be one of our competitors, but I can definitely tell you the difference between that and a digital one.
All right, well, let me run you through a couple, and maybe you can talk me through it. So we have some sound in the control room, and this is a demo that you put together for one of the apps that you have. Let's roll a little bit of that.
Yeah. Definitely a Moog drone. Yeah.
So you said something there right as it started rolling. Definitely
very
Moog,
classic
what?
Moog drone sound with some noise and added white noise to it, and you know the typical buildup, the filter cut off. Mm-hmm. I can hear all that in that particular piece there.
Wow. Which is cool because I heard, you know, I don't even know what I heard. I don't have the vocabulary to describe that. All right. So, all right. So, here's this is the System 55 demo. This is the big boy, right?
Right.
So here's the question. Does it take skill to play this thing?
Oh, gosh, yes. To make it, you know, musical, it definitely requires musical skills. If you just want to play, like, you know, I have all this equipment in my house, and I play with it, and I can make bleeps and bloops. But if you want to make a sound like that, that you just heard, that's pleasing, and you know, other people want to listen to it, no question that it takes some skills, and there's some people that can do some incredible things with it.
How much of the appeal of Moog and its instruments is kind of a retro thing? I mean, the original stuff in this company has been around for 40-ish plus years. Are you banking on that?
So the legacy of Bob Moog is an amazing legacy. So one of the ways that the company has grown is by constantly looking backwards. We've been constantly looking back at what Bob did. And so we created these legacy modulars. And in the process of doing that, we learned so much about the circuitry of those original systems. And so when we reintroduced those legacy modulars, our engineering team was like, well, we've gathered all this knowledge. What are we going to do with it? So the most iconic synth of all time is going to be reintroduced on Thursday, the opening day of Moog Fest, and that's the Mini Moog Model D, which is the 1971 synthesizer, the most iconic synthesizer of all time, that is going to be back into production on Thursday of this week.
This is maybe a more technical question than you are ready to answer, but I imagine back in, 1971 or whatever it was, and I was a history major, not an engineer, so bear with me. But I imagine that those things were made with, like, vacuum tubes and big circuitry and all that jazz. And today, we could do it all with stuff that fits in the palm of your hand. Is the actual manufacturing different?
The manufacturing is not different, nor is the design. This was part of the legacy project, is we went back and researched the ways in which they made the circuit boards. We took 2 years to source all the big fat capacitors and resistors that you're just speaking about. We hand-wired everything point to point like they did back in the day, and we're doing that all again for the Mini Moog Model D. We put together a manufacturing system that allow us to do that profitably, and now we're going to just take it to the next level and incorporate the learning into the Mini Moog Model D.
Do you think as this company goes forward into the increasing digital future, it's going to be able to keep going with the actual hardware, or are you going to have to eventually, of necessity, turn to the iPads and the iPhones and the places where you can have these apps where you can carry it around in your back pocket?
Well, we've come through that period a little bit. When I first started, everybody was gaga about software this and software that. Yeah. Everything was done on a computer, and we've sort of crossed that chasm. Actually, it's kind of interesting. 2008 was when I noticed it changed, and I talked to our distributor in France about it. He says, everybody realizes that when the economy tanked, all their software wasn't worth anything, but all their hardware was still very valuable. And so they started from an investment standpoint, the hardware was more valuable. But that's not the real issue. The real issue is musicians want that tactile feedback. They want that keyboard. They want to twist that knob. Mm-hmm. They want to flip that switch. They want to move the dials around. And, it's a very visceral process. And without a piece of hardware dedicated to creating the sounds that they have in their mind, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to be creative. So I don't see hardware, at least not our hardware, actually ever going anywhere. I think it'll be around for a lot longer. In fact, the momentum of the company would indicate that we're only just beginning to see the increase in use of hardware like this. On the flip side, young people who don't have any money have to get into it from a software standpoint. And so that's why we've created the apps.
I mean, I can spend $30 on an app and be in business, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Moog aficionados are dedicated. And there is this thing called Moog Fest, which is getting bigger and bigger. It was described to me as sort of the South by Southwest for the electronic music crowd.
Moog Fest is here in Durham. It's a complementary product from the standpoint of Moog Music and Moog Fest. We both play at the intersection of music, arts, and technology. And so that's our business as Moog Music. And now we've created a festival that supports that in a very interesting way. So by day, it's very innovative speakers. We're very excited to have Dr. Martine Rossbot on board. Jaron Lanier.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have all of the names in my mind right now, but we've got a great lineup of daytime panelists and keynote speakers. And then at night, we play music. And so it's the combination of the music with the innovation, the forward thinking, the forward looking people that are make up the festival. I think music makes it all go down a little bit smoother.
Last thing, Mike, and then I'll let you go. This decision you made last year to give 49% of this company back to the employees, which is it's not rare, but it's you know, you don't see it a whole lot. How come? Why did you decide to do that?
Well, in 2002, there were eight of us. Five of those people are still with us. We've grown to 100 people now, and the average tenure there is 6 years. So I've got a whole host of people that have been with me, you know, for 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, we've added like 40 people in the last 2 years. So I've got a team there that's been completely committed to the growth of this company. I mean, you know, I think you said Moog aficionados. You talked about those earlier. I mean, the people that wear tattoos with the Moog name on it, wow. The Moog logo. They're a very, very committed bunch of people. And this was a vision of Bob's and Ileana's, that the company one day be an employee-owned company. And I tell you, I wish we had some time to talk about the ESOP, because that's how we did it. That's the vehicle. That's a tremendous way for an owner to transfer the business.
Plan, yeah.
Exactly.
And then you, eventually, you're just going to fade away out of this company somehow.
Well, you know, it'll take some time, and that's why most people don't do it. You have a choice. You can just, you know, sell it to some big company and get out of it, or you can do it this way, which is going to take a little bit longer, and that's okay. I've got to find, you know, a good successor and sell the rest. We only sold 50% of the company because that's what we could afford from a leveraged buyout standpoint, which is what basically is. Mm-hmm. So we'll sell the other 50% in the next 4 to 5 years, and then hopefully we'll find a good president to come in and take my place who's very committed to the ESOP just like I have been.
Mike Adams is the president and CEO of Moog Music. Mike, thanks very much for your time.
Great, Kai. Thank you.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening. This episode of The Corner Office was produced by Robert Garova. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll have another episode for you in a couple of weeks.